Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
You're welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. Keith Wood and Johnny Murphy with us this evening. Evening, lads.
Evening, mate. Evening.
So, obviously, a lot to get to on the pitch from last weekend and what's to come with Leinster Munster this weekend. But I want to chat about Ronan O'Gara first and his future in coaching. O'Gara is across all the back pages this morning after his appearance on Off the Ball yesterday, talking about what comes next. Let's hear what he has to say.
I'm sure you're aware, you're in all the media over here. You've been linked heavily with the move to La Rochelle. What's the latest?
The latest is decision time now. I've got to weigh up a few options, and that's exactly where I am. Just trying to decide what's best for my career, and some really tough decisions to make. So hopefully in the next 2 weeks, I will come to that decision, but there's nothing done.
Right. And is La Rochelle your only option in France, or are there other options?
No, there's other options. There's other options.
Like?
There's two or three other options. So it's a great position to be in.
Nice to be popular, isn't it?
Probably. Yeah, but popular is one thing, but you're good is the other thing. So you just want to make sure that you're making the right move, A, for you, and B, for your family. So there's a sporting decision at stake, but there's also a family decision at stake, and also, can I say with the Crusaders, is another decision I'm making.
Well, I was just going to say, where does the Crusaders figure in your thinking? Is it definitely a third season there is a very viable option?
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's what does that look like for everybody? I know what it looks like for me, Joe, but what does it look like for Jess and the kids, essentially?
Yeah. Because France is where they've been based for a huge amount of time, and
there's options at home as well. So, home is Ireland for those of you that don't know. So it's a big decision, and it's a decision that's taken time.
So that suggests Munster have been in touch then as well and said there's a place for you here.
Well, I've been talking to Munster for ever since I was a player, in fairness to them. Gareth is, I've known him all my rugby career, 25 years. So I have spoken to Munster, but there is no serious conversation in terms of the coaching position because I don't really want it to go that route at the minute.
A man in demand, Keith, certainly put himself in a pretty nice position, it seems. Plenty of options in front of him.
Yeah, I think so. He's a compelling and intriguing character, is Rog, you know, and he's great for a soundbite. And then you hear him come on Off the Ball, was it last night, and come out with a huge amount of common sense, which is great, actually. Great, you know, there's no rubbish there. There's a family decision. There are options on the table. I think within that as well, there's elements in terms of Munster. And I don't think that there's any doubt that at some stage in the future, we'll see him come back because of the work he's been doing, actually, because he has gone away to try different things, to see different things. He was a one-club man. He's getting perspectives all around the world, and the best places around the world too, by the way, in the sort of big commercial hotbed that is France, and then going down to the brilliance that is the Crusaders. So he's becoming worldly wise, and I think, look, and I haven't discussed this with him at all, and it's only from listening to what he's saying, and you're trying to figure out where his brain is working, and there's a level of madness trying to figure that out. But he's a serious guy, you know. He wants to do a really good job wherever he is. He wants to get the valuable experience. I think he'd like to be the top dog in Munster. And I think there's more work for him to do for that just yet, because he wants to do it and do it really well and do it for a long time. And every time I hear him speak, he keeps saying it, and this is privately, he keeps saying it, look, I need more information, I need more experience, you know. So he's driving towards a level of excellence, which, look, I think it augurs really well for him. I think it augurs well for whatever team he comes up to at the end as well.
And for that final part of his apprenticeship, if you like, then, Keith, do you think is that best served by what he says, if he's going to leave Crusaders, it'll be for a head coach role somewhere, if it is at La Rochelle, going down that route, or going back to Munster where gaps have suddenly appeared in the coaching setup and getting a couple of years working under Johan van Graan and being the next guy, knowing that you're going to be the successor, getting to know the province again in the 6-7 years since you've left, knowing every little part of it and being ready, not having any sort of a transition period that would automatically come if you're coming from outside?
I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to that. I think you've given both options. Actually, you're a very good presenter. Now, they're the options that are open to him. He gets a chance to go somewhere else, maybe be head coach, see what that's like, see what the pressure's like, see whether that suits him and fits him. And if it does, then maybe he is ready and able to go and come back to Munster at some stage. He could, of course, do the other one and go in there, but I don't know whether that's on his agenda, and it's very hard because we're guessing what someone thinks. So he's an opinionated man. He's a really strong rugby man, rugby mind. Ultimately, I think that if and when he comes back to Munster, he'd like to do it, as he said himself, on his own terms. So his own terms would not be second in command. It would be at some stage in the future when he has that experience to come and do it his way, the way he thinks would be best for Munster. And I've nothing but admiration for the players who have done the difficult thing and hang up their boots and then decide to actually go somewhere else and, you know, learn a new language or different cultures and try and see the way the world is and it's different. And it's because I think that broader perspective makes things a little bit easier for you when you do come back, if you do. I mean, we could have been having this conversation in relation to Mark McCall. He's a man under huge interest now, interest from England, interest from every which way, because he seems to have delivered totally below the radar all the time. He is the boss. There's no doubting about it. The guys do what they're told, and he has built a great club up that has seems to be the most comfortable ability to win trophies at will.
Yeah, Johnny, I think everyone seems to be endlessly fascinated as to what O'Gara is going to do next, because his journey has been so interesting since he left Munster and since he decided to move into coaching. That brilliant position, they have plenty of options. Maybe he'll end up staying at Crusaders, probably the best club side in the world right now, and you couldn't blame him if he decided that either. What would you do if you were in his position, as how you see his career going over the next couple of years?
Well, I think to back up what Woody said, I think the most refreshing thing is how honest he is, you know, and I think, you know, for, you know, young aspiring coaches to listen to him talk, it's something that, you know, automatically, you know, you prick your ears and you really listen. I think the big thing for Raj when he went is he had instilled, you know, he was responsible for a huge cultural shift in Munster throughout, you know, for over a decade. You know, he went to Racing and he was probably involved in another cultural shift. And then now he's gone to Crusaders, which probably historically had the best culture, you know, of all time, and has had that for decades and decades and decades. So he's just built up so much experience. I think it's now he's at the stage where, you know, he needs to run a show. He needs to implement his own culture and his own ideas, what he's learned over the last in an environment. And, you know, I have no doubt they'll work. And, you know, to go into somewhere, you know, and it was intriguing. I listened to that whole interview and to talk about, you know, what when Joe asked him about Scott Robinson's, you know, plan for the year and how he uses teams, you know, and Raj was so confident in the team that he had in his mind and how he would have implemented it for France during the World Cup if that had come to pass. So you're kind of thinking, well, you know, anyone would be, you know, would fit well to have him. And I think that's probably why the Munster thing is probably not right for him now, because he's coming in as second. Well, that's just my opinion in terms of he's coming in under someone, you know, for a place that he has, you know, he helped build and was part of the glory days, to come in and probably not run it his way. And if that is involving teams and everything, it's very important that he gets to do it his way. And I think for him, you know, and it's been a long journey for his family too. And, you know, I know when you have young kids and being away from support structures outside that, it can be very hard on your family. So, you know, a trip, you know, France is only a couple of hours away, where, you know, it takes you 2 days and you need to get to New Zealand for their grandparents and cousins and everyone to see them. So, you know, that has a huge part to play in his decision. So, you know, I think there's probably, listening to the interview, there's part of him that would love to stay in Crusaders for another year, but then probably the family side is, you know, probably let's take an opportunity in France and get a bit closer to home.
So this weekend we have Leinster against Munster, the semi-final of the Pro 14. Keith, you were over in Newcastle at the weekend, far off the ball, on the commentary of the Heineken Champions Cup final. At the time, post-game, in your analysis, you were saying Saracens just had a fraction of a percent more nous in winning that game. Having had time to dissect it all and look back again, was it as simple as that, or was there something tactically that Leinster could have done differently to win that game?
I think there were things that Leinster could have done tactically, but if I go back to my original point on it, I felt, whether it's a tactical nous that Saracens had, or their huge forwards, their constant collisions, their game plan seemed for me, it was great to see two great teams playing a final, and to see one having a tactical, appraisal of their own strengths, knowing how much pressure they were putting on another team. So Leinster went 10-0 up, and you would say ordinarily, like, it's rosy from here, because Leinster are really good for
the dream start.
It is it's a fantastic start, and. But I couldn't almost understand how they were 10 points up. They were under relentless pressure from pretty much the first minute or two. They were left off a little bit by a few errant passes by Saracen's backs, and they had a bit of a go, which we weren't so certain that they would have. But when they tightened up their game to put on the clamp, people have been talking about the mistakes that were made, and I do think, to follow Andy Dunn's point, that maybe the box kick has been done a little bit too much, and there could have been more variations in that kick, that there could have been a few dinks in over the top. There wasn't a huge amount of space on the field, and the manner in which they play and the narrowness of a soccer pitch means it can be very, very tight in that instance. But a lot of the mistakes that Leinster made, which were fairly kind of first world mistakes, if you want to put them that way, were because of the pressure that they were put under. I don't think I've ever witnessed, being in a stadium, I've ever witnessed the level of intensity on every single facet of play. And I mean, they weren't getting their hands on Johnny Sexton, but they were getting their hands on everybody else when they got the ball. And it was only at the latter ends of the game where Johnny got in for a couple of kind of man and ball tackles because of the pressure that was going on to nine and at ruck time at nine. I just thought, when I look back at it now again, it would have meant that Leinster would nearly have had to have made no mistake at all for 80 minutes in the face of white-hot pressure for them to win. So if that is the case, the manner in which they're playing, then tactically they had to do other things.
Yeah, Johnny, I guess it's a sure sign of a team's greatness that Saracens find themselves in that position, 10-0 down to 14 men for another 7 minutes, both props off the pitch injured, that you don't feel sorry for yourself. You don't think, we've thrown everything at this team and it's not going our way. That actually they remain calm, they remain confident in themselves, and they're actually able to look around at Leinster and go, even though the scoreboard isn't reflecting it, we're getting at these guys.
Yeah, I think there's a kind of, you know, I suppose there's a relentlessness in how they play, and a kind of a stubborn belief in their process of what they do, that, you know, they are never, ever beaten, and they know that if they continue on their process, that it will reap benefits, regardless of scorelines. And they knew that they were going to get those opportunities, regardless of the external factors that had gone on, the injuries. They can't control any of that, but what they can keep controlling is their process over and over and over again. And the way they play, they kind of, you know, they swarm you in defense, they do play with width. They can play. They can also play quite close with their head, with their big ball carriers, and they have a fantastic variation in terms of who they play off at first receiver with the likes of Alex Good and Lazowski, and you know, these guys. They pop up multiple times and for multiple touches, and it's just relentless. Mm. And as Woody said, you need to be on your game for 84 minutes to make sure that you come out the right side of the result. And I think it was one of the best finals that I've ever seen in terms of two absolute titans of European rugby going at each other, and the smallest of margins, you know, dictates that outcome. And you know, there's two opportunities and Leinster, you know, not kicking the ball out, but then even at the end of that, before Sean Maitland scores, to Leinster's credit, they have a chance to stop us. It's a 2v2 in defence, and Jordan Lamar makes a defensive error. Same again when Gary Ringrose doesn't pass. They have another opportunity after holding the ball for another period of time, and then Liam Williams gets a really good man and ball tackle and a turnover there. And they're your opportunities. But I think that you have to give credit to Leinster that, you know, they actually held the ball and also held Saracens out for such a long period of time that they had another opportunity to stop us. But unfortunately, you can't take two mistakes in any kind of setting in Saracens, and they'll just kill you.
And such is the way of modern sport. I'm sure Stuart Lancaster and Leo Cullen aren't going to be patting themselves on the back and been part of this great sporting occasion and one of the great Champions Cup finals. They're going to be looking for ways to improve. And like a lot of the analysis, Liam Tolan was making the point about Brad Barrett's statistics, 28 tackles, asking why was an inside centre making so many tackles, surprised that maybe Leinster didn't go for more of a kicking game. Was your sense, Johnny, watching that if Leinster had gone for more of a kicking game, that no matter what happened, Saracens would have had an answer?
I think, you know, Saracens are incredibly good in the air, and trying to win that aerial battle against Saracens with, you know, the likes of Liam Williams and Sean Maitland in the backfield, it is very hard. You know, I don't think there was a whole lot of tactical change that needed to happen. It comes down to a couple of executions. And that's how tight it was going to be. It was always going to be that arm wrestle. Potentially, you know, as Woody says, there is potential options to try and slow up their defence, the defensive line speed with a couple of chicks. But then you're creating 50-50s on the ball, and you have to get to that ball on the ground first. So it's very difficult. So I think Brad Barrett's, you know, tackle stats, that's kind of just him. That's how he plays. He's that defensive leader, and his work rate is second to none, and I think he gets himself up off the ground and back in the defensive line because he is that linchpin and as the defensive organizer, that he puts himself in that position repeatedly to make that tackle.
Keith, a lot of the conversation around Leinster ahead of the semi-final against Toulouse was that they weren't at the level they were at 12 months ago, and part of that was because of the loss of certain players, the experience of Issa Nathewa, Joey Carberry, Jordy Murphy, all gone. They're going to lose Jack McGrath this summer. They may lose one or two more players that they'd like to have around for the depth that we spend so much time talking about with Leinster. They have a lot of players, maybe, though, they've lost a little bit of quality. Is that a concern for them as they try and improve and get back and winning it back next year? That actually, if you're just constantly taking a little bit here and there, ultimately, it's going to cost you in the end.
Yeah, I don't know if it is a concern. I mean, we talk about the strength and depth because there's a huge amount of quality within there. And actually, within that three-month period of time prior to the semi-final against Toulouse, Leinster lost a lot of games, but they blooded a lot of players. Players that are going to see a lot of game time come the World Cup in around that period of time because the players have to play. And they could have been callow-faced young guys going in there. No, they're not. They've already played some matches and lost some matches that they won't want to. So I don't know. I actually think Leinster are incredibly well-placed. I do think it's very hard to replace leaders or go-to people like Nasewa. I think Joey Carberry gives... he wouldn't have been playing the other day, I don't believe. So I think Carney had got himself back into form and played well on Saturday. So and obviously Johnny Sexton would be picked. So no, I don't. I do think there's changes and there's cycles all the time. I will say that in the last, and I think it's only 5 or 6 months, but both England and Saracens are the two games that kind of stick out for Irish rugby in for Ireland and for Leinster, is there was so much pressure put on the particular game plan that both Ireland and Leinster were playing that we didn't have enough of variance and variation to try and get past it. So I'd still go back to England's variation against Ireland, the chips in over the top, the moving of the fullback, the turning people all the time, trying to do something a little bit different. Even though that is, there is a risk involved in all of that. At times, what's really good enough for Ireland or good enough for Leinster is not maybe good enough all the time. And I just think, I won't say we've been found out, but teams have figured out how to put us under a huge amount of pressure. So it was good enough to beat New Zealand in the autumn, but England did a number on us at the start for whatever reason. And in many respects, it for me, it felt last Saturday that Leinster, I thought Leinster played bloody well, but I felt they were under intense and total pressure for 80 minutes. Now, it is a final, and you will expect there to be a lot of pressure, but you would have expected a let-up. There was none. Mm. So even when they were scoring, they were under pressure.
And is that fixable from an Irish point of view by October?
I think they both are. I think they're elements of variation. And I think we have been one of two leading teams for the last couple of years. Like, we really have been. And last year in particular. And the second you start performing at the standard that Ireland performed at for 12 months, every other team is saying, how do we dismantle that? So we need to have the same view going forward. So a lot of what works will continue to work. It isn't a revolution. It's an evolution for the year. And I think there's a huge amount of time for Ireland to be sharper. Leinster's manner of playing has been good enough to beat everybody this year, with the exception, I think, of Saracens. So I don't think they need to change anything in the next 2 or 3 days to play against Munster.
Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Well, let's move on then to what's going to happen on Saturday. 2:30 kickoff at the RDS, a sellout, the Pro 14 semi-final, Leinster against Munster. Johnny, a lot of the build-up will be about who this game is most important to. For Leinster to end the season without any silverware would be unthinkable, considering what they've been achieving in recent seasons. For Munster, they need to show they haven't stagnated. How do you size this one up?
I think it probably comes down to team selection probably player availability from Munster in terms of, probably Keith Earls, Joey Carberry, you know, whether they are going to be, fit and feature. And I think that then probably lands it on a bit, rather than it be maybe a 70-30, it brings it probably to a 55-45, given, the sore bodies that are going to be around after last weekend from Leinster's perspective. I think it's vitally important for both organisations. There'll be a massive want from a Munster side to send Fla and Felix off on a high, given what the journey they've been on and what they've given to the province as a whole. And it also, this time of year in Leinster, I they've been in finals for however many years in a row now. They've won a lot of silverware, so they are still going to be seething after last week, and they're going to be hurt. But they'll feel like they need some silverware to justify it, and to beat Munster in a semi final, and then potentially another Irish province in a final, probably gives them the real feel that it's. That it is a successful year.
Keith, it's hard to properly preview the game when we're not fully sure of the two teams and who's fit for Munster and whether or not Leinster might rest a couple of players or feel that a couple of players don't have much left in the tank after last Saturday. Leinster have won 4 of the last 5 against Munster, but the game in December at Thomond Park, where it got properly scrappy and there was a good tension to it, that Munster won and really flew out of the blocks. Is that the template for going again at the RDS on Saturday?
I think there's a fair amount of that, definitely. And I do think that win gave Munster a huge amount of confidence going into the rest of the season. Now, they of course, would have liked to have gone further, and the semi-final loss upset them a lot. But you can see by the quality of what Saracens did at the weekend that they're up against it, and I think the squad was. It's funny. We did a Heineken Roadshow last week, and I couldn't separate the two teams because I said, look, there's very little in it. They're both able to do different things. I would say the same for this game on Saturday, and I'm not sitting on the fence with that. I do think that the game exacts a toll on its players, something of that intensity. I mentioned it on air. The Saracens players weren't jumping around going up to get the trophy. Mm. They were shattered. They were wrecked. They had left it all on the field. Now, you can't say but that Leinster had done the exact same. So that does take its toll. And so it is about starting well for Munster, getting themselves into a good position, because you'd want to keep going at the very end and hopefully be within shouting distance and hope your freshness works. But I still see a bruised team, but also a proud team in Leinster who won't want to have weekend followed by another weekend of defeat. And I read it somewhere that it would be just very disappointing for Munster to lose another semi-final, but it would be almost a disaster for Leinster because they are at a place where they're winning silverware a lot. Munster are still on a journey to try and get back up to that point in time. So I'm not sure. I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping to see Earls and Joey Carberry back, because Carberry, I can't say in particular, because Earls sets the place alight every time he plays. Yeah. But Munster look more confident and more able, I think, when Carberry plays 10.
We are live on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter, so send in your thoughts to us. And the best one will be our Heineken star comment of the week and win some off the ball and Heineken goodies. Now, Dave McIntyre was dropping some bombs on this morning's OTB AM. It is our sports breakfast show, which you'll find on all our social channels every morning from 7:45. Well worth tuning into. Dave was picking his Champions Cup 15 of the last 10 years. Here's what he had to say.
13 was the one I had to think most deeply about.
I'm distancing myself from whatever comes next out of Dave McIntyre's mouth. I had no hand actor part in this.
Brian O'Driscoll only won two in this decade.
I mean, that's a lot. He was also the
For that reason, I've given it to Matthew Bastereau.
Oh!
Because he won three, and he was part of the great Toulon team that won three in a row. yeah, there you go.
So in terms of attributes, how much better was Bastereau to Brian O'Driscoll in your view, David?
As an overall player, he's not even in O'Driscoll's league, obviously. But when it comes to what was achieved by these players over the last decade of Heineken Cup rugby, Bastereau just about shades it.
Wow. Keith, rubbish. Bastereau ahead of Brian O'Driscoll?
Yeah, rubbish. And I'm very entertained. Dave, it's time to go back to GAA, that you're not allowed to talk about rugby anymore if you pick Bastereau ahead of Brian O'Driscoll.
This is the kind of crap you've had to listen to for 10 years travelling to games with him.
I've spent too much time with Dave McIntyre. He'd shorten your life, in fairness to him. And he's a grumpy fella too, you know. Is he there? Is he around? Is he?
He ran out in case O'Driscoll turned up.
I'd like to be able to give him proper grief to his face, you know. It's funny. I hate teams, and I hate, you know, where you say, well, who's the best team? Who's the list? Teams work because of the group of guys that you're with and what you achieve with them or don't achieve with them. And it's very hard then to kind of cherry pick. Like, even man of the matches, I find a little, I understand why they're done, but they're a little bit odious. And so the idea of saying he's better than him, so you can't in any due regard at all to what happens on a rugby field pick Bastereau ahead of Brian O'Driscoll for any competition.
I think, Johnny, that Dave's reasoning is that he was doing it on the last 10 years, which rules out Leinster's 2009 victory. So O'Driscoll only had two Champions Cups, whereas Bastereau was part of a Toulon side that won three in a row.
That's still ludicrous, though. Like, And it's not even in his preferred position. Like, he's a 12, too. Like, he shouldn't really be 13. He doesn't, like... Yeah.
And this guy is the voice of rugby in Ireland. It's shocking.
No, it is a shocking decision. shocking decision.
All right, well, I think we got what we wanted from this little part of the show. Lads, thanks a million for joining us, as always. We'll talk to you at the weekend.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Cheers, Nathan. Cheers, Johnny.
Thanks a lot, Keith.
Talk to you later.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.